Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. On our last episode of the podcast, we discussed Locate South Georgia and South Georgia Leads, a collaborative effort of 20 counties promoting their entire region for economic growth and development. So I thought it'd be fitting, as the follow-on episode to that, that we explore one of the communities that participates in that effort to promote the whole region. Today, we visit a small town in South Georgia that has the distinction of being the peanut capital of the world. And we visit a former mayor who's now a state legislator who came to live in this town to start his own business, but quickly got involved and became a long-serving local leader. We're going to go talk with former mayor and current state representative Bill Yerda in the small town of Sylvester, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Public Software. While the name may sound new, Public Software has been helping small towns, cities, counties, and utility districts for over 50 years. They provide integrated software to help manage utility billing, accounting, and additional services. They help organizations accurately calculate, collect, and distribute money, print and mail statements, and effectively manage budgets. Some say they are a B2B company, but Public Software is focused on H2H, human-to-human connections. With decades of proven success and reliable service, let them make your software applications work seamlessly with the human interactions in your community. You can learn more about Public Software and what they can do for you and your organization by visiting www.publicsoftware.com. That's www.publicsoftware.com. Public Software. Strong relationships, stronger communities. All right. I'm now in the small town of Sylvester, Georgia. We're not at City Hall. We're actually in the chamber office. It's a nice historic building. We're actually in a room with some high ceilings. So audience, if the audience hears some a little bit of an echo, we're in one of those nice historic structures that has been fixed up nicely. And I'm joined with not the current mayor, but the former mayor of Sylvester. He's now a state representative. So I would normally say Mayor Bill Yerda, but I will say State Representative Bill Yerda. Thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, Mr. Mayor, welcome to Sylvester.
Well, thank you. I got a chance already to get a little bit of a tour. Your chamber director was kind enough to take me to lunch. I think it was called Fat Boys.
That's right.
Barbecue.
It
was very good.
Great place.
I recommend it. It was a full house, so I know the locals like it.
You have a full stomach.
I do. Delicious, great downtown. I got to see some of the sites, the schools. But yeah, so just can't wait to get to talking about that. But before we get to talking about Sylvester specifically, I want to get to know you a little bit and let our audience get to know you. So I'll start with the same standard question I always start with in these. Were you born in Sylvester, Georgia?
I was not. I'm an import. So, people still call me an outsider from time to time.
You never get rid of that one.
You never get rid of that one.
They elect you to put you in charge for a little while, and still you're not from around here. You don't understand how this is supposed
to work. Of course, if I'd have grown up here, I might not have got elected. So, you
know. That's true. Might have been an advantage then, right?
That's right.
Well, where were you born?
I was actually born in Perry, Georgia. Okay. My dad was in the Army at that time, and I stayed with my grandparents. My mother was there while my dad was in the Army. So a few months we stayed in Perry, and then my dad got a job teaching agriculture in Moultrie.
Okay.
And we moved to Moultrie, and that's where I grew up in Moultrie, Georgia.
All right. So graduated, that's over in Colquitt County.
That's correct.
So graduated Colquitt County High School?
Moultrie High at the time.
Moultrie High. Okay.
That's right. All right. Yeah, but it's now Colquitt County.
I actually got a chance a couple years ago to tour. They got a pretty new high school facility over there.
Very nice high school down there.
Worth County also.
We have an extremely nice high school, just a year or so old, and we're very proud of it. It's a great looking school, great facility.
So from Moultrie, not Colquitt County, Moultrie High School, after graduation, what did you do then?
I went to ABAC.
Okay.
I went to ABAC for 2 years. I studied agriculture economics. And
I should probably tell our audience, because we're getting a broader audience, and so not everyone's from South Georgia. So we should say that ABAC is the Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College in Tifton, Georgia.
In Tifton, Georgia. Great school.
All the people around here know exactly what
that
is.
Right. But it's a great school, and I went 2 years at ABAC and then transferred to the University of Georgia. Got my degree in ag economics.
Okay, okay. Well, what'd you do after college?
I went into the banking business. I actually worked for C&S Banks, which are no longer around anymore.
Yeah.
But if you're old enough, you remember C&S Banks. They were a pretty big branch bank in Georgia, headquartered in Atlanta. And they've subsequently been bought out by other banks. But I worked there for several years. And in 1984, my wife and I, Susan, decided to look into a business here in Sylvester. She's from Sylvester, my wife, Susan. And we thought that we found out about a gentleman that had a jewelry store that was interested. He had had the store since right after World War II. He served in World War II and was ready to retire. And we decided to take a look at that business. And this was Susan's hometown again. And, and of course, she was pushing to come back to Sylvester. so I had the in-laws and her, and they ganged up on me. But I really always wanted my own business. And this was what we thought might be a good business for us, and we've been here for 36 years.
Well, tell me this, because I know, just like you just said, a big part of it was this was your wife's home.
That's correct.
Family here, and so I'm sure that was a big motivating factor for you to make that decision. But tell me what it was, well, for her to want to come home and for you to want to be in a small town. What were some of the things that really just drew you here, obviously aside from her family?
Well, I spent a lot of time here,
yeah.
You know, when we were dating, and spent a lot of time, you know, after we married, and it was just a great town, a great people here, had a really, really nice community, and it seemed like a growing community and a place that we wanted to be, and it just was a great opportunity for me to open a business and buy out this gentleman. And my in-laws were in business, and they kind of helped us get started, and it just worked out. Now, my wife taught school for years. She was a first grade school teacher, so you know, when you first open a business, you're kind of starving. So we went through a period of years where it basically lived on her salary. But anyway,
it was good to have that steady income.
It was good to have the steady check, because you couldn't necessarily depend on when you get first started. But we were able to grow little by little, and we started out in downtown, of course, in the original building that the gentleman had. And it was, I think the building was built in 1901, so it's a historic structure, which we really liked. Not a lot had been done to it over the years, but about 10 years later, we remodeled it and actually bought the building next door, which was an old drugstore.
Okay.
And it had sold out to one of the chain drugstores, and had an opportunity to buy that building, and we opened up the walls. And
so that was your expansion.
Yeah, that
it
was our
move,
expansion.
It was an expansion.
Yeah,
okay.
So we've been in the same place for 36 years. We just expanded next door a little bit, and we We have fine jewelry and gifts. China, we still do bridal registry and things like that.
And you're still in operation right across the street from here, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Right across the street from the chamber.
All right. So if you come to Sylvester, you go to the chamber and then you just walk across the street.
That's correct. That's correct. You got to. Matter of fact, I had a state legislator in just a few minutes ago. He just left.
Okay.
He stopped by to visit with me. Tom McCall. He's the chairman of the Ag Committee. And,
this is his last year, I believe.
It's his last year, yeah. And he's running for Farm Bureau president.
Okay.
But it was good to see him.
Your story sounds eerily similar to mine, because I when I came to Ocilla, I bought a historic building. I didn't mean to get into the retail business. That kind of fell in my lap later. I'm curious. If the answer to this question is similar for you as it was for me and me getting in local government, was your downtown involvement and your business, obviously you were probably as a business owner involved with, if there was a Main Street program or what the precursor to that, you were probably involved with the chamber. Is that what led you to get involved in local government?
Yeah, somewhat. We were involved. We actually didn't have we weren't a Main Street community at that time, and that was really kind of influenced me to get into politics. One of the things that influenced me to get into politics, because I thought it would be good for us to be a Main Street community, and that would be very helpful for our downtown. And I've always had a real appreciation for what we have here in Sylvester. We've got a really intact downtown with a lot of historic structures. And I think people really like that today. We've got lofts downtown that people live in. We've got, I don't know, probably 19 or 20 lofts that people live in above the stores, and our downtown's really come a long way. Probably what got me involved in politics, interestingly enough, was the building we're in used to be the post office at one time.
Yeah.
And the post office had some environmental issues due to some gas leaks from a service station, and they subsequently decided they want to be on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And that did concern me, because the post office draws people to downtown, and I kind of got involved in trying to keep the post office downtown.
Right, you want to draw people in.
That's right.
You want them to be across the street from your store.
That's exactly right, because it draws a lot of people. But once it was decided, not much we could do. We contracted our congressman and things like that and tried to push for keeping it downtown. But with the environmental issues and some other issues, and then wanting to be on the highway, I guess, they decided to go ahead and move on the highway, which is fine. It actually turned out good, because this made a wonderful chamber building.
You got involved on that issue before you were actually...
I got involved in that before I was even in politics.
And did that kind of motivate you to get more involved?
It did, I think.
That sounds like one of those just single issues that makes you get into more things.
It kind of did, and like I say, the downtown and wanting to improve our downtown and improve our community overall. Like I say, we've got a great community, but I felt like we could do some other things that might improve it even more.
So when did you first decide to run for office?
This was back in 1998. 98 is when I first ran for the council, and I was unopposed and served on the council. And then I ran for mayor after 4 years, and then started serving for mayor in 2002.
Okay. Now every town, every city, I should say, in Georgia is different.
Yeah.
So how many council members are there in Sylvester?
We have four council members and the mayor.
Okay. And are those all at large? Are they districts?
They all have districts.
Okay.
They all
Everybody have has districts. Districts. Uh-huh. I've had people say it. Don't you know how this works? Aren't you a mayor? I know how it works in Ocilla.
Right. Yeah. Every town's different.
Every city charter.
And the number's different.
That's right. Because I've got five, and your population's actually bigger than mine. What's the population of Sylvester?
We're about 6,200.
Okay. Yep. You just almost double us. We're about 3,400.
Yeah.
Ocilla,
So
okay. So ran for council.
Right.
And you were unopposed. I know there's a learning curve there.
Sure.
And you actually already answered usually the next question I ask is, what motivated you? What do you want to accomplish? And you want to do things in downtown and kind of work on some things there.
We I felt like it would be a good idea for the city to go to. We had a strong mayor. I always felt like that the city was big enough that it needed a professional full-time person, city manager. So we went from being a strong mayor to a council manager formal government. And I think that was very positive for our community. And it's, you know, we've been that course ever since. And, you know, it did take a little power away from the mayor. I think one of the things I asked for was to have a vote, you know, and yeah. I'm one of the few mayors that can vote, you know, other than just a tie, I can make a motion and things like that. Right. So the council, you know, went along with that in our charter, you know, and of course, sometimes you may not want to vote on certain issues. So
sometimes it's nice to say, well, I didn't get a chance to vote on that
that's
issue.
That's right. That's right.
You'll never know my opinion.
You know, well, what that's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it is. After 4 years, why did you decide to run for mayor? And I'll ask you this way. What, I mean, was that an open seat? Did you have to run against the incumbent? What was the situation?
I ran against an incumbent, and I think we just – and he was a good friend, but we just had a different idea of how to run the city. Not that mine was necessarily better than he is. It just, you know, he was not really – he didn't think we needed a city manager. That was one of the big issues. And I and the council actually did. The council agreed with me that we did need a city manager. And, you know, we just had some policy differences, you know. But he did a great job, and, you know, it was just one of those things that I wanted to step to the next level.
So now the charter, the changes to your city charter – those were made on your term as council or only after you were the mayor?
Actually, we did that when I was mayor.
Okay.
So actually, you brought it up and we were working on it, but we actually did it when I was a mayor.
All right. So the first elected mayor, and you said that was in 2002.
That's right.
Okay. Uh-huh. And you were mayor for?
I was elected in 2001. But
2001.
Okay. Started serving
in 2002. Because that was, uh-huh. Yep. And so mayor for how long? That you served
17, almost 18 years.
Okay.
Yeah, well, 5 terms.
Before we get to what you're doing currently, and I definitely want to get to that, there's probably some very specific things you want to do in the beginning.
Yeah.
But then there's things that come to you
right.
as you go.
Right.
So what were some of the things that you needed to tackle or felt like, you know, were just kind of drives for you?
Well, you know, one thing I always felt like you want a really neat, clean community. And, you know, litter is one of my pet peeves. I wanted us to have a clean community. I think we really made a lot of strides there. You know, if your community doesn't look good for people coming through, then nobody wants to put a business here.
Hard to grow that way. That's
exactly right. So it was very important that we look good, that the right-of-ways were mowed, you know, that we were just tidy to me. And some of them had called me a neat freak, but, you know, some of the workers in the city used to call me a little bit of a neat freak, but I took that with pride. Because, you know, you might have somebody come through here once a year, but I want us to look good. Yeah. I want the city to look good. And you never know who's looking. That's right.
Because usually if folks are looking to possibly come in and do any kind of business development.
That's correct.
They don't come by and ask you to show them around first. They look around for themselves.
That's exactly right.
And if they like what they see, then the chamber gets
contacted, or
the mayor.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Well, if you got a nice, clean community and it's an attractive community that helps along with good schools. That helps people want to, you know, move here and stay here.
Yeah. So what were some of the things I haven't asked this question of somebody in a while, and I know there'll be some answers on for as many years you served. There were those types of things. There was downtown development. There was, you know, an attractive and clean and tidy community. What were some of the things that you didn't expect to deal with? And when you're the mayor, all of a sudden they come to you, and I'm sure you're going to say some of the similar answers I get when I ask that question of other small town mayors and council members.
Well you never know what you're going to get being the mayor. I mean, you never know. I mean, it's funny. I used to tell a story. I'd get all kind of calls like, there's a street light out here that it's keeping me awake all night. It's shining in my window and I don't need it. And then the next call would be, well, I need a street light up here. Hey, I can fix that.
I know, just switch them over.
Yeah.
If you could just pick one up and move it over somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, honestly, I didn't get that many complaints. The city, I felt like, did a pretty good job in customer service. And that was one of the most important things to me, is to provide good customer service. The city is a full-service city, and we have an electric and gas department.
Yeah.
And one of the things I didn't anticipate was, you know, being an electric city, you're going to get those calls, you know, when it kind of, you know, when cutoff time comes. Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't, you know, listen, I can't pay my bill. And, you know, of course, you know, everybody's got a story, and some of them are, you know, certainly legitimate, you know, but I think the former mayor handled it differently than I did. He got a little more involved in it than I did, and I pretty well told City Hall, I said, listen, you know, the mayor's not going to make decisions on that. Y'all go by policy, and that's the way we got to do it. You know, there are always certainly extenuating circumstances that we may have to help people, but I don't want to get involved in deciding who gets cut off and who doesn't get cut off, because that's just something I don't need to be doing.
That's right. There's always things like that, yeah. We provide an Osceola water sewer. We do have natural gas, but we're not an electric city.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. If you say it like that, people that don't understand electric cities in Georgia, we do have electricity in Osceola.
Exactly.
Make sure no one thinks that by me saying we're not electric. But it's provided by Georgia Power, and that's who we pay all of our bills.
That's right.
But
they're not going to call the mayor to
That's right. So I don't want to worry about cutting off the water that they try to get to me, cutting off the
power.
That's
right.
That's somebody else.
That's right.
Talk about the benefits of that, because I'm a little jealous, to be honest. You know, all of those, it's in the 40, I want to say it's 48 or 49 communities in Georgia.
Yeah, 49.
And so that provides a little bit of revenue. Obviously, there's more maintenance, and more to coordinate and oversee, but that does provide you a nice little extra revenue to do things. So do you see that? I'm the outsider looking in, because I look at it, and all I can see is the revenue. You probably look at it, and all you see is the problems.
There are a lot of little issues go along with it, of course, I explained.
Yeah.
But it does give an advantage, and Sylvester had its own electric system since the early 1900s, and we kept the system. A lot of cities, I think, sold out to Georgia Power, probably, that were originally in the electric business, but for some reason, we stuck around, and honestly, I think that's attributed because actually, a particular family in the fellow, Mr. Jones, is the mayor now. His family actually had a long line of being the electric superintendents, and it was very personal to them, and they took a lot of pride in it. And I think that the idea of selling that system just didn't even cross their mind, or weren't going to let that happen. And I think they convinced the councils that that wasn't going to happen.
It was a matter of pride.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But it does provide some advantages. You know, there's maintenance, of course, involved. And, of course, when you have hurricanes and things like we had Michael a couple of years ago, certainly that was a huge strain on our system. But we're part of MEAG Power, and actually I serve on the MEAG Power Board and have for about 10 years. And it's a very interesting business, the power business, and it's been a great benefit for our city. Not only to provide some revenue, you know, we can set our own rates. The council sets the rates. It's not set by the PSC. We also, you know, if we can use those rates to attract industry to our community, so that's a positive. And, you know, I think it's good that we've had that over the years, and it's a very valuable asset to our community.
Yeah. Well, I want to, because obviously I've alluded to, you're not the mayor anymore. You just said
That's
Mr.
Right.
Jones is now the
That's
mayor,
right.
Mayor Jones. Let's talk about that, the decision to run for state representative, and that was just last year.
It was.
So what was it that after 18 years, and I guess that's right in the middle of a term you were serving, made you decide to run for state legislature?
Well, a state legislator had decided not to run, Ed Reinders, and he had retired, and I had not really thought about it, honestly. I thought he would be in the legislature, you know, right on, and, you know, I had no, you know, interest in running against him, but he decided to retire, and actually he's moved to St. Simons Island now, but I just thought it was an opportunity to do some things for my community and our district and Georgia as a whole. You know, Georgia's a great state. It's a wonderful state, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people probably listening that it's the best state in the country, and, you know, certainly in USA, it's the greatest country on this earth. So I'm proud to be a Georgian, and, you know, we have issues in South Georgia. We have a lot of issues that we need to resolve, but also we have a lot of opportunities here. agriculture is the number one industry in our state, and we're in the breadbasket. We're in the best agriculture area in the state, and if not the country. We've got some of the most fertile land and some of the most productive farmers anywhere in the world right here. So, you know, promoting agriculture, promoting economic development, trying to help with education, health care, you know, those are certainly issues in our communities and rural areas and rural hospitals. You know, I thought with my experience in local government, I kind of could see what some of the needs were, and that kind of convinced me. And it wasn't an easy decision. When I was considering it, I really, really did, you know, it's hard to leave a position, you know, as mayor, and it still is to this day. Yeah. You know, I miss it. I really do. Being mayor is different from being a legislator.
Yeah.
Being mayor, you could, if you see something in the park that needs doing, or you see some trash in the park that needs picking up, you can call somebody. It doesn't work that way in the legislature.
I thought as a representative, you'd be more powerful.
Not necessarily.
You've got influence over bigger things, but not as much direct as what
that's
you're
right.
Saying. Yeah. Well, what do you see in that? Because, you know, I was half joking with you about this. Had to be the strangest freshman year as a legislator.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You know, because here we are, 2020, and that was a special election because of an early retirement midterm. Our terms are 2 years, whether it's a state rep or state senator.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was halfway through. So you're running for re-election.
That's
right.
Now. I had to run for re-election. Yep. Absolutely.
but your first legislative session obviously got interrupted.
It did.
By the COVID-19.
Nobody could have envisioned what we were going to be facing when we started out, and certainly the priorities all changed.
Yeah.
You know, it was a huge difference, and you know, of course, we suspended the session in mid-March, and actually we came back the following Monday to give the governor executive powers to fight the virus, and that was certainly important. And we appropriated $100 million to fight the virus also.
Since you had to take that action, and now you've gone back and finished out the session, a lot's happened, and so I'm curious. Now, I've talked to a lot of small-town mayors about what's going on in their communities, and I've talked to some legislators, including my own, about how things are at the state level. But you're both. So what's your perspective on, and I guess I'll broaden it out, not just Sylvester, although obviously you're paying a lot of attention. You still have a business here. It's right across the street on Main Street. How has this affected rural Georgia, maybe differently than metropolitan areas? And I'm having conversations where it sure seems like this may be creating opportunities. Now, obviously, no one would have wished this on us, on anybody.
Yeah.
But it's kind of having this interesting effect of we're kind of getting a reset button. And especially with things like economic development, it may be creating some opportunities because people may look a little more favorably at a rural community to bring business now. So from your state level perspective, but with that rich experience you have with 18 years as the mayor of a small town, what are you seeing and what do you think are the possibilities or maybe the increased challenges over the next few years?
You know, I think it has actually made an impact on people looking at more rural communities. Obviously, cities have had their issues with a number of things as of late, but you know, being in, you know, large groups and things like that, certainly. But I think of, you know, supply chain, agriculture, people wanting to know where their food comes from, certainly presents a lot of opportunities for us here in South Georgia, because I think people didn't realize how many things were processed overseas. Our pharmaceuticals, I was just astounded by the amount of pharmaceuticals that are made overseas, you know, in China, for instance. I was astounded by even some of the food that comes, you know, from China and overseas, you know, and I think people are, with this, they're taking a little closer look at having things closer to home. And I think that presents some opportunities for us. I think there's a resurgence in interest in manufacturing here in the United States. I think people realize that that's more important today. We can't depend on necessarily other countries, you know, when we get in a tight, because they're going to take care of themselves. So we've got to be able to take care of our own selves. And I think that presents opportunities for not only rural areas, but all areas of the United States and Georgia, I don't really think, honestly, the pandemic certainly has been serious, and certainly Albany, we're close to Albany, and Albany was the, you know, yeah, that was,
it was a hot
that
spot.
Was the In hot the spot, the one it, hot spot, the first hot spot, and you certainly, they had issues over there, and it, you know, certainly being that close, we have a lot of people that work in Albany, and you know, we had some issues here, and in Lee County, which is part of my district also. But I don't think the unemployment issue in South Georgia has been as serious as it has been in North Georgia. And I say that because I think that the trade and tourism business in Atlanta and visitation has taken a huge hit. And I don't think we've taken the hit. Not to say that we've business has not been hurt.
Well, we didn't seem to have as much of a boost from hospitality and tourism.
That's
and
correct.
So we can't that, take
that's
as much
correct.
Of a hit.
So I don't think we've taken as big of a hit. Most businesses I know are back operating. I don't know. There have been, you know, a few that have not survived, and certainly restaurants, I'm sure, have had the hardest time because of social distancing and that kind of thing. But we've got a couple of new restaurants thing opening up soon here, and yeah, we're excited about that. But I don't think we've had the hit, although one of the things as legislator, I get constituent calls because the Labor Department's just been inundated with processing unemployment claims. And you know, that's one of the things I get probably more than anything, constituent calls about problems with unemployment.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. My representative for Osceola is Clay Perkle.
Yeah.
And I'll tell everybody.
Clay, well.
He's my favorite state representative. I have to say that. But now that you're up there, I'm going to threaten him next time there's a local control or home rule issue.
There you go.
That he's in danger of losing that favorite status.
Well, see, he hadn't met a mayor, right?
To Bill Yerda. That's right.
He doesn't know the inside story, does he?
I tell him. So you tell him too. So. We have some great legislators.
We do.
But it's
a great
to have someone who knows the local
government. We are
struggle.
Blessed, and certainly in our area, to have some great legislators, and it's a pleasure to work with those folks. It really is.
All right. Well, I've got want to talk more about Sylvester, because you got some things that you've done. I want to kind of talk about some of the assets and things that people can come enjoy. But before we get to that, I've got a segment of my interview I always do called the Get to Know You questions to help people get to know you. So none of these will embarrass you or wreck your reelection campaign. I just got four quick questions. So the first question, do you have or have you ever had a nickname?
Well,
that was a good laugh. So I think I'm going to get more than just Bill.
Occasionally, my wife may refer to me as something, but I better not say it.
Yeah, I want to keep my G rating, if that's where you were going. No nickname?
I don't think I've had a nickname.
Other than the neat freak from your city employees?
It could be.
All right, just Bill, which I assume is short for Bill. All right, next question. Got to answer this one. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, my goodness.
They're going to cue it up. You're next on the stage. Your words right in front of you?
Let it be.
Let it be. All right. Pulled that out of nowhere. Good job. All right. Next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish? This one's easier.
Oh, gosh. Favorite? It's got to be a steak. Got to be a steak. A filet.
All right. A filet. How do you have it cooked?
I like mine a little more done than probably most people, kind of medium.
Okay. All right, filet, cooked medium. All right, final question. If you could attend any concert of any singer, band, duo, group, any kind of performer of any kind, but they can be either alive or dead, whose concert would you want to attend?
That's a good question. Gosh. Temptations.
All right, the Temptations.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for letting me get to know you.
Yeah.
Since we were using the chamber's office to conduct the interview, I thought it made sense to sit down with the chamber director in Sylvester to discuss the economic activity, including the challenges of small-town industrial growth and certainly dealing with a global pandemic.
Hi, I'm Karen Rackley with the Sylvester-Worth County Chamber of Commerce and the Worth County Economic Development Authority here in Sylvester, Georgia.
Karen, thanks for letting us use your conference room at the. Now this was. Let's talk about this building because we have a high ceiling. We had to mention that with Mayor Yurta. But what did this building used to be before it became the office of the Economic Development Authority and Chamber of Commerce here?
It was the post office,
okay.
The old post office, and it's a great repurpose of an old building. And the Worth County Economic Development Authority back in 2008 were housed in the old hospital off of Highway 82, and they got with the Worth County commissioners and put some money into this building, and it's beautiful. It's greatly suited, and it's a perfect place to visit when you come into our community.
Well, it's a beautiful building.
It shows well.
I noticed the cages when I came in the front door, and I was thinking, my first thought was, you know, teller cages like at a bank, but I said, no, this doesn't look like a bank. You know, it doesn't have that look and feel of a bank, so I knew it was something other than that. So post office.
They kept as much as they could, you know, original. So we have the old wanted posters signs and the like you said, the cages are where they stepped up. One thing they did have to cover that was a real good talking point, one of the EDA directors that first originally was involved in the, you know, repurposing, there was actually in the cement before the, when you walked up to the post office window, a curve in the cement where so many people had stepped there.
Oh, nice.
But we had to cover that with tiles.
So yeah.
We weren't able to keep that.
That shows the age when cement's dipped that much just because of people stepping on it. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about all things economic development here in Worth County with you. But before I get to that, I like to get to know my guests a little bit. So let's talk a little about you. Were you born here in Sylvester?
No, originally born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Married. We moved to Bainbridge for a little while. My husband worked in Dothan, and from there we moved here. He had family here, and we ended up establishing ourselves here with two children when they were 2 and 4, and they actually both have gone through the Worth County school system and graduated and become wonderful young adults.
Well, I know part of it's just opportunities and jobs. You said your husband had a family here, so that's where there's definitely
that's where
a draw.
We came.
But what is it about? I like to ask this question. What is it about, you know, small town? Because if you were in Atlanta, you had to at least agree to come down with him once you married him.
Well, that's awful funny. But when you have children, you kind of tend to look at what's best for your children as well. And the way I was looking at it, where we lived, I could get up, take the children to school, and be at work within 20 minutes. And I don't think you could even say you could anywhere get near that in Atlanta.
No, certainly not today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Time well spent, you know, money well spent for our kids. They had a great education here in Worth County. We have an amazing school system. I was talking to you earlier. We're doing the teacher appreciation breakfasts this morning.
Yeah.
Some of the school teachers there were the ones that were there when my children were little.
Oh.
So, but we have a phenomenal school system. They do an excellent job with the education of our children. So that was a major factor in us staying here too.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's definitely a good job if you're going to raise a family. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, I guess, just broadly the economy, and I'll just ask you kind of generally and we'll see where the conversation goes. How are things in Sylvester as the hub, but throughout Worth County on the business side of things? And I guess you can't have a question, a conversation in 2020 without saying, well, in reference to COVID-19 and the coronavirus pandemic, how are things going? And I guess are things still happening, or is everyone kind of at a standstill? So just talk about that, how things are here in Sylvester.
We're uniquely situated. Number one commodity here is, of course, our agriculture. And that keeps our economy stable. I mean, we could not do it without our farmers, our agriculture. So you have to give them the heads up and the kudos for what they do. It is one of our major, like I said, economic engines here in Worth County. The second part is that we have over 400 small businesses here in Sylvester, wow. Worth County. Some of those have been here for over 40, 50 years. Probably a good 60% of my chamber members have been members for over 30 years. So the stability, the private investment of people into our community is what keeps us going. I talked to the teachers this morning and I said, you know, we kept our businesses open and it was largely due to shopping local. And if anybody doesn't understand how important shopping local is, I think COVID pointed it out.
Well, when you don't have the same freedom to cross the county lines or go to the next biggest city, wherever,
that's exactly right.
It makes you appreciate what you have here and makes you say, hey, we got to support this because we want it to be here.
your mom and pops that invest, they're the ones that do the hiring. They employ people. You know, they rent, they pay utilities. You know, we support them, and we did it through COVID. I think it pointed out a major plus in shopping local. We saw it in our increase in sales tax receipts. I think a lot of this, too, is that we are right slap in the middle of the larger municipalities.
Right.
We don't have all of the industry that got hit the hardest. Mm-hmm. Your tourism, your hotels, your retail, your restaurants. We didn't have that like they did. Our community stayed home and they supported their local businesses that were right here in Worth County.
Yeah. You know, before we were before we set up to record, you and I were having a great conversation, and one of the things you mentioned that I thought was worth noting, a high percentage of your local businesses are locally owned. You know, there are some chains. Every community is going to have some of them, but even a lot of your franchises that people would if they see as they pass through, they'd see it, oh, that's a chain, but it might be a locally owned franchise as opposed to that. So talk about the importance of, I guess, that local ownership, I guess the more buy-in because the people are here and more plugged into the community and what that means.
Well, it's more significant because they weren't given anything to come here. They actually established here on their own, so that's what we call heart, sweat, and tears.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
sweat,
you know,
equity.
The old, they have the sweat equity in it. And we have, if you look at our downtown, it's phenomenal. Our city of Sylvester has done an amazing job with the streetscapes and the Main Street program and everything, and encouraging businesses to come here too. And that plays a big part in it as well. The other part of it too is, you know, these small businesses, you know, are here because of ag business too.
Sure.
You've got the insurance companies, you've got the crop fertilizers, and you've got the different businesses that are here because of farming.
They may not be the ag business, but they support the ag businesses that are
and,
here.
And we have good industry. Now, you know, I can't say in the last several years we haven't lost and we haven't got hit hard.
Sure.
You know, we just lost ConAgra and Coca-Cola is moving to Tifton. Now, with Coca-Cola, we're not losing employees. They're moving with them. So that was a blessing in disguise. But another flip side to that is we already have that building being looked at, it's probably already promised. They'll be here through December 31st of 2021. Mm-hmm. Okay. The ConAgra building is getting a lot of interest. While we may have lost a big industry, a lot of those employees were luckily absorbed into the workforce because there was a big need for workforce, especially for essential workers. So a lot of them got absorbed back into the workforce. So I think it, you know, if you have to have a blessing, it's all in God's timing. And I think that we're going to move forward from this. We have an opportunity with it, I guess is what I can say. And we're going to expound on that opportunity.
I'm certainly a believer in God's providence, but I can't help but to ask the question. It sounds like from the examples you just gave, you'd lose someone. I mean, ConAgra is a large company. Coca-Cola is a large company. Mm-hmm. So the number of employees obviously is going to be an impact. But resiliency seems to be the word. You've already got some people looking at it. You're already moving on the next thing. Mm-hmm. You don't let it get you down.
Define you.
And say, oh, we're going to have this abandoned building now forever. Oh, woe is me. So what do you attribute that to? I know you enough to know you're too humble to say that it's just you, although I know you're a part, but what would you attribute that to in the community?
Leadership. We see what, you know, as I said, the city of Sylvester, but we don't just have the city of Sylvester. We have three other municipalities, Poland, Sumner, and Warwick. Mm-hmm. All of them have great leadership, as well as our county commission at this time. My chamber board, my EDA board, we're all on the same page. We're all on the same page as that we want one thing. We want to see Sylvester, Worth County thrive, but we want to see it thrive in the right direction.
Yeah.
I can tell you this, that we have three, just to tell you the investment that we put into our community, we have three industrial parks here. One is full. It's an older one and it's full. The other one is got our Coca-Cola and a scale systems and automation business in it. And I'll tell you a little bit about them in a minute. And then the other one is a grad ready site, which we've invested in. The city of Sylvester has been helpful in this heavily into. It's ready for development. If we have a company come in and I point out the Walmart that's there, they came in, they purchased the property in November. It had a 75,000 square foot building and they had the key to the building in April.
I'll take
so
from
all what, of the permitting yeah, and everything has already been done.
I'll yes, take from what you just said. Mm-hmm. The key to your resiliency is being ready and always looking
yes,
for the next thing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And our city and our county and our commissioners, they don't sit idle. No, sir. Yes, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Leadership.
Mm-hmm. It all falls back on your leadership. Yes, sir.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital media production and marketing for small businesses in small towns like ours. We believe that small businesses and rural communities are the key to sustained growth and high quality of life. And we know that now, more than ever before, small businesses need someone that they can trust to help with the very necessary aspect of digital marketing to help your business grow and find new customers. Your digital presence is now just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media, email lists and newsletters, and making sure that all of those things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and the county lines, so that you can focus on keeping your community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Caitlin, Bailey, and Matt can guide you into growing your business, go to irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
Well, I want to talk more about Sylvester.
Okay.
As I mentioned, I got a chance to ride around actually with Karen Rackley, your chamber director and economic development authority director. And she was able to point out this and this, and then I'd say, oh, these, I like your sidewalks. Is that a streetscape project? Yep. That Marietta was a part of that. And then she made sure to show me the village garden. I think it's called Village Community
right,
Garden.
That's correct.
And she said, oh yeah, ask Marietta about that.
Yeah.
So you,
yeah,
you've, and in 18 years, you were involved in a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah.
So talk about some of the community assets. And
sure.
I wanted to make sure I put your name attached to it because I know you're not going to try to take credit for it. So I wanted to give it to you in advance. But and I was told to ask specifically about that village garden. So
yeah,
talk about that one first.
Yeah, yeah. Sam X. White, it was his vision for something in Sylvester that would, none of us had an idea what it would turn out to be. As a matter of fact, I did a resolution honoring him in the legislature this year. But it's just amazing what they've done and the people he attracts to our community. It's a beautiful facility. Actually, it's in one of our city parks. And actually, while I was mayor, some folks from our community donated some additional property of that park that made that space available for the community garden. And it's been a wonderful learning experience for students and people of all ages really come out there and see what Sam's doing, teaching people how to grow things. You know, we've kind of gotten away from, most of us are a couple of generations from farmers,
right,
and,
you
know, we're not growing our own food anymore. So it's good to have somebody in our community that's teaching the young people how to, you know, that the food doesn't come from a grocery store. It's got to be grown by a
right,
farmer, and it's got to be produced in agriculture, and there's a lot that goes into that. And
well, describe it a little, because I, like I said, I rode by it. And
yeah.
But Karen even mentioned
yeah,
that is used to feed people
oh, yeah,
in your community.
Yeah.
So it's not
yeah,
just a learning experience.
Exactly.
So describe it for someone that you need to paint the vision so people want to drive and say,
right,
check this out.
Right. Well, it's just first of all, it's a really, really nice looking facility. It's got gardens. He's got hydroponic gardens, you know, to demonstrate how hydroponic farming works. Actually, there's a pond out there that they've even stocked with fish, and, you know, that's part of it also. But it's just a beautiful facility. And they grow all kind of different vegetables out there. They've got honeybees. They've got, you know, you name it, ag that's grown in our area they've got, and a lot of things that aren't grown here traditionally. I think he's putting in some citrus and things like that. I know he's got a lot of banana trees and things like that, but it's a great opportunity for people to learn about how things are grown. Plus, It also feeds our community, and it provides food for people to come to and gather and you know, actually carry home fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, sometime in rural Georgia, we don't have as much choice, you know, to find different vegetables and things like that, you know, as the larger communities that may have a big, huge supermarket chain may have. But, you know, that provides fresh vegetables, you know, to people, and it's certainly a very positive thing for folks that need, you know, food like that.
You just mentioned it was in one of your city parks, which means one of.
Right.
You have several.
We have several parks.
Talk about the recreational facilities, because I heard they're pretty impressive. I rode by a couple.
Yeah.
And I know there was some outside the city where they're building some new ball fields.
Right.
So it sounds like y'all have done a lot of work over the years in that.
We were actually blessed to have city parks in every ward of our community.
Oh, okay.
So we actually have five city parks. Of course, one centrally located, Jeffers Park, right on Highway 82 that everybody recognizes because the train's there.
Right.
That's kind of a landmark in our community. But we actually expanded and built another city park in the Ward 1, which is a real nice Irene P. Hall Park. It's a real nice facility. Actually, that was a mobile home park that flooded, and it actually flooded twice. And we were able to work with FEMA to buy out those folks there and get them out of harm's way and actually make a nice park out of it. It's made a really, really nice park down there. Sam's in one of our parks, and still it has a pretty large area, and he actually is talking about expanding and doing some other things out there. And, you know, that's very interesting, and hopefully he can. We also have the recreation facility that the city's a part of. We work with the county on that as a joint venture, and we're expanding our ball fields out there. And that actually is something I'm very, very excited about, because that will actually attract people to our community. We can have tournaments and that kind of thing, and it's going to be a real asset to our community. It's pretty centrally located. It's just outside or adjacent to the city limits, and it's going to be a real nice facility for our community to be able to attract people and give, you know, recreation is so important to the quality of life for communities, and it's just very, very important to have those facilities that keep people in your community and give, you know, kids and adults a place to play softball or baseball or whatever, you know, to be able to gather and like I say, have tournaments and things like that bring people to your community, that spend money in your community.
There's that tourism we need to start bringing back, right?
Yeah, that's right. But it's a work in progress, but it's going to be a real nice facility.
Yeah. We'll talk about, because I believe you guys have the Peanut Festival. It's an annual festival, and 2020 has not been a great year for festivals. So.
No, it is not.
But talk about some of the regular activities that go on that the community comes together for.
Yeah. Of course, the Peanut Festival, unfortunately, this year has been canceled because of COVID. But it's a great community asset to have the Peanut Festival here. Peanut certainly... we consider ourselves to be the peanut capital of the world.
I was going to say, I bet there were a lot of people that love to have the Peanut Festival in their community, but you've got it here.
That's right. We've got a lot of peanuts grown in Worth County, and we're very proud of it. And that has been a staple of our community for years and years and years, and it attracts huge thousands of people to our community. It's we have one of the biggest parades in the state, the Peanut Parade, and then of course the festival is down in the park, and it attracts vendors and huge amounts of people to that. And it's just it's a great chance for people to gather and have fun and spend a little money and just enjoy, you know, what our community has to offer. And it's unfortunate that we can't have it this year. 18 got messed up because of the hurricane. So we kind of had a tough couple of years, several years. Last year was okay, but so we'll be back. And one of the other things that hopefully we're still going to be able to have, and I'm not positive at this point, but we have the yard sale, the 100-mile yard sale. We're one of the communities that participates in that, and That certainly brings a lot of people to our community that, and even the businesses like our business, we'll put things out for the yard sale on the sidewalk and things like that. So it's a good chance for not only the folks, the residents to sell some things, but also for the businesses to also sell some things also in that. So that's a big event for our community, and hopefully that will come to pass, that will continue. You know, I don't know that it's been finalized yet, what decision is on that yet, but hopefully that'll come to pass also.
I mentioned earlier as I was riding around with Karen, just making a comment about the sidewalks and the lamps and everything. You've actually mentioned sidewalks. I know that goes along with everything looking good. So
absolutely, and we've done a number of streetscape projects here, and that was very important to me to make our city walkable. You know, people like to get out, and you see it more and more that people get out and walk. And one street I'm particularly proud of is Isabella Street. It's a historic street in our community that it's a pretty wide street, and it actually connects, Isabella connects our schools with downtown. So we felt like that it was very, very important to have sidewalks, because not only from kids walking home from school and that kind of thing, but just to have a good place for people to get out and walk and not have to be in the street or somebody's yard to get out and get some exercise. So that project really turned out nice. We were able to put some historic street lamps on that street, and it really turned out nice. And it actually spurred other projects. Of course, we originally, when I was on the council, redid the downtown, put all the power lines and the utility lines underground, and put historic lamp posts and completely redid the sidewalks, and that made a huge difference.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that cities must invest in their communities, and then that way it provides businesses, you know, you get that partnership, you know. If your sidewalks are attractive, that attracts businesses to your downtown. And that, I really think that redoing the sidewalks downtown actually spurred business. We became a Main Street community, had a Main Street director, and started having events downtown.
Yeah.
You know, that made a huge difference to have those events downtown. We've had concerts downtown. We've had movie nights downtown. And a number of other things that attracted people to downtown, and that's very important. But the first thing we did was to do the sidewalks, and they had gotten in bad shape over the years, you know. So
it's amazing, and it's probably very common to underestimate the value of little details like that. Because sure, you don't want to have broken up sidewalks.
That's right.
But underground utilities, looking sidewalks, you know, lamps with a little style, historic nature.
Yeah.
Makes a huge difference, and it's hard to quantify that. It's a little intangible, but it's certainly valuable. So.
And it actually spurred people refurbishing their historic buildings.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we did that back in...
The city led the way.
So yeah, led the way about very shortly after that.
Yeah.
We we bought the other building and went back, took the aluminum off. Almost, there must have been a great aluminum siding salesman that came through Sylvester back in the 60s or 70s, because every building,
every one of them
had aluminum on the, you know, siding on it. And when we opened in 84, that's what we had, aluminum siding. And you know, it's just kind of a shame to cover up the historic structure of the buildings.
Right.
And so we went back to the original look of the building and so many others. And a gentleman named Hal Carter, he is honestly done a number of historic projects in downtown and other communities also, but he took a old hotel building and made loft apartments out of the top and put businesses downstairs, and certainly that has spurred a lot of growth downtown to have people downtown. And honestly, having people live downtown cuts down, this is a side benefit, it cuts down on crime and things like that. You don't, you know, with people living in your downtown, it really, you don't have the issues that we had at one time, honestly. And not that we had a huge crime issue, but they're just intangibles to having people living in your downtown. And certainly, you know, as a business owner, you know, you got somebody close by that can shop with you. So certainly that's a positive, and it's a positive for restaurants. And like I mentioned, we've got actually three new restaurants is opening up. That four. Four. I'm sorry, I left one out. Actually, four restaurants.
I won't ask you which one you were.
I'll give that away. But so we're excited about that.
That's good to see. Like I said, when I was asking before about opportunities, and there are communities that are being held back by this because they're choosing to kind of, I guess, take the batten down the hatches mentality. We'll wait till this all clears over, and then we'll figure things out.
Right.
And then other communities are saying, no, we're going to go ahead and move forward. We're going to go ahead and try to get new businesses. And you've got to have those business owners that say, I know things may be tough, but I still want to go ahead and go because we'll come out of this together. So I'd say that speaks volumes for this community. And very likely, since you were there for 18 years, your leadership in it, that they say, okay, this community stands behind its businesses, so this is one I want to be a part of.
Well, people have really, really supported our community and businesses in our community. And it's I was just talking to Karen about the sales tax. The sales tax dollars have actually increased, which is pretty astounding.
I've said it. Again, we wouldn't wish this on anybody, but a pandemic has got to be the best stay at home and shop local campaign you could have.
That's exactly right.
Tell people to stay close. And it's kind of having an effect where people, we were talking about this with Karen, people are appreciating what's there.
I think they do. And I think that, certainly there's been a lot of online shopping and you got more people doing that than ever did it before, but still there's an appreciation for shopping local. And they understand that it supports the sales tax dollars, support our schools.
Right.
They support the city. We're a T-Splost also, and that supports roads.
And a lot of your big projects you want to do, infrastructure projects, a lot of that comes from the SPLOST.
We couldn't do it without it. One other thing we did I'm kind of proud of is we actually put in a broadband system in our community, and we actually serve the schools with internet. And a number of big businesses with the internet in our community. It's not throughout the whole community. It's not residential, but we do serve the schools, and that's been a very positive thing for our schools. Before we put our system in, really they didn't have the connectivity that they needed to be able to serve the kids with computers, and that's turned out to be a good thing and a little source of revenue for our city and a positive thing for the students and businesses that needed a lot of broadband connectivity.
Well, I know I'm supposed to call you Representative Yurda, but Mr. Mayor, as we wrap up,
I still get mayor most of the time. Honestly,
it's going to take a while for them to stop.
I take that as a compliment.
Absolutely. Well, as we wrap up our conversation, I want to give you the same opportunity I've given my other guests, and just let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience, and tell them why they should come visit, maybe move to, maybe start a new business in Sylvester, Georgia.
All right, Sylvester's just a beautiful little community. It's got a really, really historic, nice downtown. We're in a great location. We're about 18 miles from I-75. We're in a great location for industry, transportation-wise. We're right here on 82, Highway 82. But it's just a great community, great people. We have really, really good schools. We have a brand new high school that I'm very, very proud of that is just a great facility. It's a beautiful facility, and I think people will really be attracted to that. We're doing some things in recreation. Recreation is certainly important in our community. The schools are building a new track facility. Like I mentioned earlier, we're doing some new ball fields for recreation. We've got a lot of sidewalks. We're a very walkable community. Just a great place. We've got a super low crime rate. Just a great place to raise a family, to start a family. And, you can buy a house here very reasonably. We don't have the Atlanta prices on our homes here. And you can buy a really, really nice house here in our community at a reasonable price. And whether you work in Sylvester or work in one of our surrounding communities, it's just a great place to live. We're close to Albany. We're about 25 miles from Albany, which has quite a few amenities, about that far from Tifton. And like I said, close to I-75. We're not too far up the road from Atlanta, Georgia, and we're just a great centrally located, nice place to live. Great people, great churches here. We've got a strong religious community that really supports people, and very proud of that. It's just a great place, again, to live and work and raise a family and enjoy. We also, on the northern part of our county, is Lake Blackshear, which is a great recreational place for fishing and boating and just to visit. And that's only about 20-something miles north of Sylvester. So it's a real asset to our community and, again, just a great place to live.
Well, you were Mayor Bill Yerda when we first started talking about doing this interview about 2 years ago, actually.
That's right.
So I'm glad we're finally doing this.
That's right. But I've been at a hide for 2 years. You caught me, though.
That's right. Well, Representative Bill Yerda, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Representative Bill Yerda for talking with me today. I also want to thank the Sylvester Worth County Chamber of Commerce for supporting this episode. I hope everyone out there will continue to be safe and take care of yourselves and each other. And I hope you'll find a way to support the small towns near you through a visit when possible, but also by engaging with them digitally through social media and supporting their local businesses through e-commerce. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for the season, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and Public Software for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.